Hey there, welcome back to another episode of the Collecting Keys Friday Focus. Today, you have me as your host, Dan Austin, and I am here. I'm honored to be here with Rishi Telly, one of our Scale community members, and we're going to do a deal case study where we're going to ask him the same four questions that we ask all of our deal case studies. This episode is going to be really cool. We're going to talk about inherited properties and the struggles that come with those types of properties. So Rishi, welcome to the show, man. I'm excited to dive into this deal. Just like a quick 15 second, who you are, what market are you in?
Thank you so much for welcoming on the show. So I am one of the Dan's newest recruits on their Scale mentorship program. And so far, Dan and Mike have been the pillars of my personal growth, as well as the growth of our business over here in Austin, Texas. We have had some cool stories to state, and we'll be going through that. And some of the case studies, well, just we'll be actually approaching one of the case studies, which most of the wholesalers struggle with, and they come across is the homes that have been passed down to them to inheritance. Yep.
And you're in Austin, which is like a tough market, I would say, but you guys are making it look easy, which I'm just super impressed. And I say that because like the higher end markets, you think about like Southern California, a lot of Texas now, but in particular Austin, you go up to the Northeast, some of those cities, like for some reason, those metros can be really challenging because there's so much competition. I mean, you have institutional money coming in, you have a ton of investors, there's a lot of eyes on it. So it just makes it more competitive. You guys have been killing it. And I want to dive into this deal case study and get right into it because I'm excited to hear the story. So let's talk about it. First question, what kind of property is this? What are we talking about?
So this property is basically a single family home. It was 1985, 1986 home, three bed, two bath, pretty cookie cutter-ish, but the layout was pretty nice. They had an extra room, good kitchen that can be opened up. A lot of play on that, honestly, on a flip. So there was a lot of potential. The key factor was that the owner had not upgraded this property since they bought it.
Okay.
So it was, everything was original inside, except for a couple of things.
So 1980s original?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can imagine 1980s, but it sounds like it was in decent condition, kind of a standard home that somebody would buy in a neighborhood. So that's always helpful, assuming you get it at the right price, which we'll talk about. How did you find this? What kind of marketing were you using?
The marketing that we used was SMS campaign on this one. And I think that was a mailer sent as well. So it was a dual prong approach on this one, but we received this response through our SMS campaign.
Gotcha. That's why we always coach and teach and do ourselves as like the multiple lead or the multiple marketing streams, because sometimes one marketing thing might not do well. Sometimes direct mail is not doing well that month and texting is doing well, or cold calling is doing even better. Or you have texting regulations that come in and stop all of your leads for a month until you get the right certifications and things like that, which we just saw. And so having that is really good to balance out your lead flow, but it's also a reinforcer, right? Somebody gets a letter from you and then they get a text from you. They're like, oh, okay, these are legit people. It's not just a random person texting me. So glad to hear that the plan worked as intended. Okay, so what's the seller profile here? What list did they come off?
So it was a motivated seller. The seller wanted to move to Milwaukee. The motivation was that he was met with hostage and the taxes owed. So
yeah. I get that. I can get on board with that. So was it a owner occupied?
That's correct.
Okay. So let's just talk about the story. Let's dive into this story. Talk about the seller, how the deal went through. I want to know about the follow up. So the lead comes in. This is a guy that he's motivated. He's like, wants to get out of town. Lead comes in and you guys follow up. Like, what did that follow up look like? Were you able to actually like go and get an appointment right away? Or was it kind of a tough conversation with him up front?
So this is a really interesting piece that, you know, people and how a personal connect can change a conversation from I don't trust you to the end of the conversation. Well, yes, meet me tomorrow.
Gotcha.
When I called him up, the first question that he had in his mind was that, yeah, I've had a ton of callers already. I've had a ton of people who have approached me and I've had offers. That was the first statement, even before I introduced myself. So he was sweet, though. He was not aggressive. Most of these callers are like, either they don't entertain us or something, but he did want to sell his house. But equivalently, I gave him a rest assurance that, hey, this is who we are. The website obviously helped.
Uh-huh.
The backbone of the conversation was the website. I redirected to him that, hey, if you want us more information for our company, you basically go onto the website. So that reassured him. And me giving the reassurance on a personal level was the changing factor for him talking almost, the first conversation was almost 35 minutes.
Wow. Well, you and I think you and Rusheng kind of do that. You guys naturally, just your personalities. And by the way, for listeners, Rusheng's your business partner. You guys have kind of like a, you talk quite plainly and really simply to really get across, right? You're not animated. You guys just kind of have that calming, caring, empathetic type voice. And I think that's really helpful when you're talking to sellers, especially when they come and they say, I've talked to a bunch of people. I've already gotten offers. I don't even know why I'm calling you kind of attitude. And you can kind of set their defenses down, which is really key.
And most of the sellers, they think kind of it's, most of them, as I like, I would say 50 to 60% of them, they're kind of like, hey, why do you want to buy my property? Why are you buying my property? Like, why, what's the reason for the call? We get some negative response from them. The first thing that we do is we apologize. And I send out like a care package, like, hey, thank you so much for even talking to us. But if you have any real estate needs or if there's anything that we can help out with, you know, just some adding some value on top of it, they remember us. I have received a call back from a frustrated caller who was frustrated not with me personally, but me sending out just a box of Ferrero Rocher. It was just that simple.
Yeah.
I was like, sorry if you have peanut allergies, but here's, please accept this as an apology if I did offend you. He called me right away. And he was like,
really?
Yeah, he did. He did call me back. He apologized and for, but then he told, I'm not interested in selling, but I'll follow up with you if there is anything needed. But regarding this, the property that we are talking about was a tricky situation because he was followed up by other people before. So we had not much skin in the game, honestly. And how we got involved was just with this personal touch that, hey, we care about you. Let us put our perspective once and then we'll meet you in person. I never discussed about a offer. I never discussed a price on the house. I never discuss about what we can do for him. I was like, hey, this is what we do is buy homes on cash. And that's basically it.
Yep.
But we'll have to come and sit with you, work with you, and we'll explain you what we do in detail. That way is you know who we are and we're not some random people calling on phone.
Right.
And you see that we live in the city. We'll be there for you and you see the faces. Just that was the whole conversation. That was the summary. And he was impressed with
that 35 minute conversation was you kind of, doing that, breaking down the defenses, saying, hey, here's how the process is going to work. So you had that call, then you scheduled an appointment. And so that you one call got to the appointment. Is that how it worked?
Yes, that one call. And we were meeting him the next day.
Perfect. Nice. That's awesome. So on this too, because you said it was mail and text, he was on both. How long was this, like your first month of marketing that this came in?
It was the second lead of first 10 days.
That's amazing. Yeah. So that's cool. Because sometimes there's like a lag time, right? Like you do your marketing and then the lead that you end up getting isn't your first or second lead. It's like maybe the lead that finally comes in on the second batch of marketing. So that's pretty cool. It came in first 10 days of marketing, your second lead, and you're already making an appointment. So from that point on, you have the appointment, you walk the property, you see it. You obviously say, oh, it's 1980s. It's not, hasn't been updated. You're running your numbers. When and how did you make the offer?
So interesting. We did take our pictures.
Mm-hmm.
This is a funny thing that we, not a funny thing, but it might not be the right approach. And I would like your insight on this one as well. But
sure,
we usually don't give out offers straight away. We refrain from them. That has actually put people's trust in us because we tell them that we'll give you our offer within 24 to 48 hours. We have to analyze the numbers because we don't know what's going on. And the thing is, the pictures do help us, you know, ensure that what we need to fix and what are our costs going to be. That even though we already know what we're going to offer, even before we visit the house, that just tests the water with them. And it basically gives an impression to the client that, these guys are not so many Joe Schmo. They're just not joking around. They're pretty serious about it.
Right. Instills confidence in them. And what we found, so that's how Mike and I do. Like we try, unless there's like a ton of competition and it's a tired landlord, he's like, I don't care. I just want to know your number. Okay, we can give you a number, right? But we learned this, our lesson the hard way. When we were first starting out, we had this guy, he had this project, this house he moved into, he's retired and he had a ton of work. Like he had ripped the whole floor. Like there's a hole in the floor. Like you could walk in the kitchen, there's no floor. So he's definitely overhead on this project. And he basically calls us. We walk the property. We go back and sit in my truck for like 5 minutes, talk about our offer. We go back in. We're like, hey, we're ready to offer you $135,000, which is exactly what he asked for. And he's like, ooh, I don't know about this, guys. Well, it turns out he never accepted our offer. And he ended up accepting an offer for like, I can't remember, like 155 from some other investor like a couple months later, which we could have done that price too. We could have done 150. We could have gone up to like 165 on this property. So we lost it because we were too aggressive. So now what we always do, we make an offer, we'll walk the property, we go back, we review the photos, because it is always, sometimes you miss stuff when you're walking. You're like, oh, I didn't really notice that. So it's good to review as you build up your repair budget, and then we'll call back. So we'll schedule a time after the walk. They're like, hey, we'll call you back between like 3 and 4 p.m. tomorrow. Does that work for you? Or between 8 and 9 a.m. tomorrow, does that work for you? Try to get that so that they're ready to get the offer, and then we make the offer. And we usually do it over the phone, because it just gives them the ability to being face to face. It's like that car sales position, like that, where you're at the car lot and the guy's sitting right in front of you and he's like, do you want to take this offer? And you want to think about it, but they're pushing you, right? So we try to not do that and be a little bit more respectful and give them that space. And it sounds like you did the same thing and it worked on this one. So you went back the next day, you made your offer?
Correct. And we went back in person.
Oh, you went in person. Okay.
Yes. To explain the offer, because he was very hesitant on the numbers that he was seeing. So we had to come up with a legible offer that was, hey, we're not ripping you off as well, but yes, we cannot give you more than this because it's not justified.
So he really wanted to sit down with you guys and go line by line and understand anything you're doing. Okay. That makes sense.
And he appreciated that a lot. And honestly, he did have 3 other offers on table.
Wow.
And none of those did show up at his house. They only emailed him the offers. We went, we signed the contract that day.
That's amazing. And you have to read your sellers, because some sellers, that would not work. There's been multiple times where Mike and I sat on the couch and gave people offers and it did not work. These are people that ultimately ended up selling, right? And so it's about reading your seller and understanding what they're going to need and meeting them there and being there with them, whether that's physically or not physically, right? So, okay, that's pretty awesome. So the next day you get this thing locked up. So this was like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Like, we're moving. Okay, so now let's talk about the disposition. How did this work on this one?
The disposition was interesting. So the disposition part of this, since we were kind of new players over here, it was a difficult ask. Getting leads is 15% of the game. Getting the lead is another 15 to 25% of the game. But now the 50% of the task that begins is disposition, the hard part. Who's your buyer going to be, the most important aspect of it? In Texas, there is one big thing that's called the option period that decides if you're going to lose money on it, if you're not going to lose, what's going to happen. That's the option period that basically protects you and this buyer, pretty much all the parties over here.
Right.
It's a nice thing to have sometimes, sometimes not so much. But over here, he was willing to work with us because of our perseverance. There's one big clause that we added was that we'll help him through his attorney. And basically getting him through this inheritance issues that he was having, and we'll work with
him. Because he inherited the property. He was living in a property that his parents or somebody had owned. And he was basically trying to still get through the, I would assume, like probate and inheritance.
Correct. And he was literally unaware about what was needed to get that property off the book. And basically, he gets out of the property, he can sell it.
And a lot of people don't realize that. So when you get property through a will, just because it comes to you doesn't mean you actually have legal authority straight away to sell it. And oftentimes, the county records aren't going to just be updated with your name unless the property goes through probate and goes through the proper process. And so typically a lot of sellers, they just don't know. Like, you see the name, you're like, why is your name not on title? When we do a title search, they're like, oh, it's because this was my grandmother's. And you're like, oh, okay, well, we need to figure this out. And there's a lot of paperwork. And it sounds like you worked through that with them.
Correct. And we actually were not aware, because the information we got from him was, hey, it's, you know, I have everything in place. I have all the documents. Good thing he had it, but the will wasn't recorded. And that was one of the major concerns, because we came to know only when the title was open and when the title got back to us saying that, yeah, this is not good.
Right.
In the time itself, we successfully had done our disposition part of things and we already had a buyer on board. We signed. Yep. So now we were closing in, I think it was 15 days, not even 15 days, honestly. It was,
oh wow,
we come to know like
quick
10 days before closing that this will hasn't been recorded with the county.
Right. And that's where you have to dig in, and sometimes you have to do legwork yourself. And so the job here for the title company is like, they just have to prove that he has authority to sell this property, which that's like what probate's usually for. That basically they have to find out and make sure that there's no other descendants that have claim to this title and that this person solely can sign for it. And if it's not, they need to get the signatures from other people, either passing off their any rights to the property or saying, yeah, I want a piece of the pie and I'm going to get this portion of it.
Exactly. Luckily, there were heirs, but they were not related to the property. So
okay,
it was a smooth transition, honestly, at the end. But the 10-day period was a crucial one because it came right before Christmas. So we were hitting a bunch of holidays, county holidays.
Oh, of course.
And the buyer, because it was end of the year, they wanted to, we were not sure if they were doing, you know, a 1031 exchange, why they were funding this deal. And if that was, this would have been a crucial challenge for us to, you know, retain the buyer and non-buyer backing off last minute on this one. It's like, yeah,
totally.
You can't. And we actually had that scare. So there was another part that we were working with that, oh, calm all the situation down.
Yeah.
Basically running around and taking care of different fires around during Christmas was...
That's how you earn your money in this business, right? Is you have to do that. Buyers are getting cold feet. They're upset about it. You're like, crap, nobody knew about this probate issue. And that's exactly where we earn our money, especially if you're trying to help a buyer close sooner by the end of the year. We deal with that a lot at the end of the year, transactions with title companies at closing and holidays and buyers saying they want to do it and sellers saying they want to do it by the 31st of the year. But that's where we earn our money. So speaking of which, what was your fee on this when you dispoed it?
Luckily, touch wood, our first. This was our technically our first and was $33,000.
$33,000. All right. You guys are flying high. $33,000 on your first deal. Listeners out there, if you've never done this before, it doesn't usually happen this way, but it does, right? And Rishi's definitely digging in and they're going to keep doing work on this. So I know that they'll be successful. And it's not that this was an easy win for you guys. You guys did the right things. You guys took the right steps. You followed kind of the blueprint of what wholesalers need to do and investors need to do, because they're not all this way. And I know you have a ton of deals that didn't happen and you've talked to a lot of sellers that you didn't close on. And so we always like to talk about the wins, and this certainly wasn't an easy one for you. So we'll leave it with this one with a $33,000 win, Rishi, and we'll bring you on for another one because I know you guys are killing it down there in Austin. If anybody here is interested in finding out how Rishi's doing, he's doing, want to join the Scale community, go to collectingkeys.com/scale, S-C-A-L-E. Put in an application, see if you're a good fit for it. We love taking, you know, investors that are already doing one or two deals and getting them to do more, 3 to 4, 5 to 6, 10, however many you want to scale to. That's what we're trying to get people to do. If you're not really doing deals yet and you want to really jump in, you can also go to collectingkeys.com/instant-investor-program. And that's where we have our Instant Investor end-to-end course, where you can just download it, watch it at your convenience, and learn all the skills to do it yourself and start wholesaling deals and making $33,000 wholesale fees. With that, thank you, Rishi, and we'll see you all next week.
Let me add something. There was a time when we actually, the real number that we could have made on this position is anywhere from 50 to 60K. That's the real number that we could have made. But we did not, our approach was never a money-minded approach. We had our intentions first to help the seller because they were at the line. The second intention was to get a buyer and help make sure that they have enough money in their pockets as well. So if we can create a happy marriage between everybody, we'll just get out what we need to. But that was the main intention, and balancing all those facets was very difficult. So just an additional note to whoever's trying to get into it, just go with the right heart and trust me, you're going to fly. So
do the right thing, ethics, and you will be in the game long-term, which is how you make real wealth. Thanks for that. So hopefully you're still listening because Rishi just dropped some heat right there. All right. Thank you, Rishi. We will catch you next time.
Thank you so much, Dan.